ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Tuesday, November 20th, 2018. I'm Kevin Larame, and as always, I'm joined by Dwayne Mullins. Dwayne, before we start the show, yesterday was what's known around the world as Thank You Patrons Day. So I want to take a second and thanks every single patron that we have for helping the show, supporting the network, and helping us be able to pay our bills every month on patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. Thank you very much for all your help.
And our next project with that regards, I think, is to get me a better mic so that you get a little bit more consistency in my sound. I appreciate that because I move around a lot. That can be challenging. Literally move around in the room, which drives Kevin nuts, and also move around physically within the city. So that's the next project. We do thank you very much for your support. Kevin, I don't think I have a chance to pour one out for my dearly beloved lost phone yesterday.
No, we didn't. So rest in peace to Dwayne's 5SE.
Yeah, I'm now, as I joked to the lovely lady at the Kudu counter, I'm now only 4 years behind in my technology instead of six. I have a 6S now, which is, I actually watched some Netflix on it last night. I went, oh, I do get the bigger screen now. Anyway.
Oh, that's why. Okay, yeah, it's cool. HD, eh? Wow.
Yeah, my photos are like, oh my God, I look like that. No selfies.
zoom out.
Yeah, exactly. No more of that.
Speaking of zooming out, Oscar Pereira and FC Dallas have mutually agreed to part ways. Or FC Dallas said, okay, fine, you can leave and you can go to Tijuana. We'll talk about this today. We'll talk as well about the new playoff format for Major League Soccer for 2019. An article in The Athletic suggesting that the Board of Governors are working hard on a project that might be accepted this December when there's MLS Cup. 2 days before, there's a Board of Governors meeting, and this will be talked about, and we'll talk about this. But let's go back to Dallas and Oscar Pereira. Dwayne, Tijuana comes calling. What do you do?
You go to Tijuana, I guess. Look, I mean, yeah. Well, there's been many a night that started and ended badly with I'm going to Tijuana as the start of it. But this is a different the Zulus are kind of a different case than having bad tequila at 4 a.m. And yeah, whatever. You know where I can go from here, and I'm not going to, because this is a PG-13 show, just like the new Deadpool movie that's coming out this winter. It's PG-13 here. But at any rate, yeah, look. This is, I think, a couple indications that a couple things going on here. First off, it sort of speaks to Dallas and them treading water where in their project right now, and also maybe treading water in the sense that they can't afford to pay someone who's been a huge part of that project and seem to have them going in the right direction. But I think that what we've seen over the past couple years is, as much as it's a lot of the things they were doing that were valuable, some of it, I think, was like papering over, yeah, you know, cracks. Right? Like, oh, we're signing these guys and isn't this amazing, our academy? But like, then you look at the real contribution that they're making, and sure, they're winning Dallas Cups, but
you're not winning MLS Cups and not winning anything else. And that next level, the next step was never taken by the club too. And I guess if you're Oscar Pereira, you're like, okay, I brought this club all the way up to here. And now to make the bigger step, it's either more money or more confidence or more bigger players coming into this team. And I don't think I'm going to have this. What's the best way to monetize and to continue my growth as a manager? Is it to stay here? Is it to go to a club with different ambitions like Tijuana, which does have some ambitions, Liga MX? And to parlay my three-club move. Look, it's not too bad. From Colorado to Dallas to Tijuana, it's all the way up.
Yeah, no, yeah, look, exactly. It is a nice little progression in his career. It's like, you know, I'm thinking a football manager here, and if I were to start with Colorado and move to Dallas and then go to Tijuana, I'd be thinking that my career was advancing, because obviously football manager is the exact same thing as the real world. But no, I mean, anyone would look at that as an advancement. But it's also, I think, if you want to talk about this from a Dallas perspective, I think it also speaks to maybe them recognizing that they need to have a more pragmatic guy in charge there that can sort of look at that team and realize to find the right balance, because I think maybe their current direction might not totally work without being able to bring in some supplementary pieces to help those kids along, without having like the New York Red Bulls model where you have a couple guys there that can supplement your kids and make them thrive. Whereas in this model, I don't know if you necessarily have the money to do that, to even afford a Bradley Wright Phillips in that sense. So maybe this is just a better parting of ways there, and maybe they need to find a Mike Petke up there, which is another team that I could sort of compare Dallas to in Salt Lake in terms of finding that middle ground, those middling teams in MLS that don't have a lot of money but tend to do better than what their finances say. And, you know, obviously the, their approaches might differ slightly, these teams, but by and large, I'm comparing them the same because they're low-budget teams that succeed in MLS opposed to low-budget teams that fail in MLS, yeah. Vancouver. But, yeah.
Colorado. Yeah, no, there's a few of those. But, no, so it'll be interesting to see who takes over for Oscar Perea. What type of coach? If I'm Mark Dos Santos, I'm like, oh man, I should have waited a few weeks. But Dali seems to be really happy in Vancouver so far, and he seems to have a lot of power in Vancouver. So we'll see who takes over in Dallas. And it's not a bad gig, you know. It's a nice weather. You got a decent team. It's quite far, and it's not necessarily filled with supporters, but players are good. You got a few good pieces, and could be a good project.
Yeah, look, I mean, you nailed it there. You want to compare Vancouver to Dallas. The biggest difference really is that Vancouver is going to have an engaged fan base, maybe an angry fan base, but an engaged fan base nonetheless, that wants him to succeed, and you're going to have an inherent pressure to that. Whereas in Dallas, I'm sure you have engaged fans. I'm not saying universally this is the case, but by and large, you're, you know, probably seventh fiddle in that market. I mean, if seventh, I'd have to go back. How many colleges are there, right?
I was like, going to say, you're being nice, because I think that's more 10th to 15th fiddle because of all the high school football that generates way more attendances than FC Dallas. And then college football, and then pro football with the Cowboys and the Texans. It's more the Cowboys than Arlington, but yeah.
That's the one comparison that they would have. You know, the Cowboys would have the same sort of presence in the market that the Canucks would. The difference being the Cowboys have a presence in the world, right? Yes. Like, that is made arguably, and I say this as a reluctant Cowboys fan. I was a little kid, okay? I like Cowboys. That's why I'm a Cowboys fan, and I'm not going to change just because they're horrible in so many ways since, but I should, but I'm not, because I'm weird that way. Anyway, but they're a world brand as opposed to the Canucks, which are a Canadian brand and maybe an NHL hockey brand. But yeah, sorry, Vancouver, you just don't have the world structure that the Dallas friggin' Cowboys do. And that's an amazing thing that's in that market that they have to overcome. But yeah, that's the biggest challenge there. But it also can be an advantage to someone coming in because they're going to get time. No one's going to be, there's not going to be Robbo out hashtags in Dallas because there just aren't enough people to make that trend.
There's not going to be a hashtag, period. So there you go. So we'll see what happens in Dallas with this news in the next few weeks. Now, Dwayne, let's dive into the big subject of today. MLS playoff format changes possibly for 2019. The article can be found on The Athletic, written by Mickey Turner. If you have the app, you can read it. And if you have the subscription, of course, you can read it as well on all your devices. Dwayne, we're not going to read the article point by point, but it's been a problem for so long, and we're experiencing it right now. It's literally right now. We're in the international break, and that international break saps out the momentum from the MLS playoffs every single year. You get the quick shots, boom, boom, boom. You get the play-in round, the semifinal, the conferences. Boom, 2 week breaks before the conference finals. And the momentum is a bit taken away from the Major League Soccer playoffs, and it falls into oblivion for 2 weeks. People forget about them, and a lot of people don't come back to watch the finals of the conferences and MLS Cup. MLS Cup is supposed to be the pinnacle of the season, and now the solutions that they might have found, and we'll know this in a few weeks, for next year is starting the season maybe a bit earlier in February, possibly late February, focusing on having games south So in the south of the United States, are you playing a lot more games in L.A., Florida, a lot more games in Atlanta. So a lot of away games for all the northern, quote-unquote, teams. So from New York on upwards, you'll play south more, and then eventually you'll get more home games in the middle of the summer. You start earlier, more Wednesday, Saturday, or Sunday games. So more weeks with two games in the same week. And for the playoff format itself, to make sure it finishes before the international break, single elimination tournament style.
Yeah, and look, I mean, that's the there's things I like about this and things I don't like about this. And we'll start with the things I like. I like the fact that it's single elimination style and it will be done in rapid fire. I think that that is the way to do it. We saw that with the USL playoffs. I'm not going to lie, I didn't have a lot of time to watch the USL this year, but I did watch a lot of the USL playoffs because it was bang, 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 and it sort of created that momentum. And certainly the semifinals and finals, with the Drogba factor playing in there, started to get attention, and not just attention in North American USL markets. You were getting because of Drogba, but also I think because it was just bang, it was quick, it was easy to follow. You know what I mean? So I like that.
It's instinctual. You see a bracket. You know, it's only one game, boom, boom, boom. It's very North American, but it's very cup style. So if you're going to call it the MLS Cup, having a cup style tournament makes sense.
Yeah, and look, and also being in a bracket style with a seeded bracket style, that means that you're giving another additional advantage to the teams that finish higher in the regular season. And that's important, especially when we get to some of these points that I don't like about it, in that you want to make the regular season mean as much as it can. And unfortunately, and now we will move into the negatives here, it does sort of, they want to add another team to the playoffs. And we all knew this was going to happen. And in fact, I'm surprised they aren't just going all in with eight, because that's how every other North American league, the NHL and the NBA, works right now. Not every other, because the NFL and Major League Baseball do not. But certainly the two other, you know, the arena sports there do work in that kind of way. And it's easy for North Americans to understand it. You just go 1-8, 7-2, 7, and so on and so forth. So the format that they would be looking at now would be to probably go to top team in the
top
conference
team
would get
a
bye.
2-7, 3-6, 4-5. Winner moves on, and losers go home.
Exactly. So you would have the lowest remaining seed would go to the top seed in the second round. And it does give an advantage to finishing first in the conference. In the fact that they are jumping straight into the semifinals of the conference or the quarterfinals of the league, if you prefer, and that they are always going to be guaranteed home games, and they're not going to have to go on the road. They could potentially just stick in their home market for the entire run of that playoffs, and that would be an advantage that they would have there for sure. I don't like the expanded playoffs, but again, it's kind of like it feels like a hopeless cause to argue against it because they're addicted to the idea, and I'm of two minds of it because I do like playoffs. I think playoffs matter in North American leagues, and it would be wrong to go the extreme other side with the single entity only, and I doubt that they would ever do that anyway, but I think that that's equally as wrongheaded. So that's kind of what they're talking about now. The other part of it, Kevin, I'll let you jump in on that thought, but and then, yeah, we'll just you jump in on your thoughts there, and then we'll maybe talk about the possibility of starting the season in February.
Well, I do agree with the aspect that the international break does sap out the momentum from the playoffs. We talk about it every year. We experience it every year. NMLS Cup in December 7th, between the 7th and 14th, like it has been over the last how many years, it's cold. And there's chances of having freezing temperatures. And I've experienced it firsthand in 2016 MLS Cup in Toronto, where it was minus 15 degrees Celsius or Fahrenheit is the same at that point. So it was cold, and it did show us that that game was not necessarily as fun to watch as what could have been. It's a difficult situation. Just a few weeks before, when Montreal played Toronto, it was just fine. It was like 2-3 degrees, and it was good. But minus 15, you're like, yeah. Now it's talking about dangers for the players to have frozen parts of their bodies while they're playing soccer. And that ball, when it's that cold, when you kick it or receive that ball on your face, it stings and it hurts a lot more. So I see why it's difficult to play MLS Cup late in that time period. And if you are able to find a way to shorten the playoffs or just move things in a way that you can fit it like last week. You can fit it just the last weekend before the international break, or the week before the international break, you play it on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, and you make a big event out of it. I can see this beneficial for the league itself, and I can see even more eyes getting interested in that tournament if it doesn't stop, right? Because now we get excited, we're happy. Oh, what a great result. That Atlanta-New York game is going to be amazing, and we have to wait 2 weeks for it. I almost forgot about them. You know, I do a daily show about soccer, and I'm going on my business, and I'm like, oh, yeah, MLS is back next week. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, no, and that always was – they split the conference finals up in the Montreal-Toronto series. It was 11 days between games. So that certainly sapped the momentum of what, you know, we in this city remember as an amazing sort of competition, amazing game, something we'll remember our whole life because we were engaged in it the whole time. But you know that there are MLS fans out there that hear people talk about how wonderful that two-game series was and went, well, maybe I should have watched it because they forgot. You know, they forgot for a lot of reasons, partly that it was Canadian teams playing, but they also forgot because there was such a stretch between the two legs and it killed all the momentum. And yeah, they did need to get rid of that. And the answer probably always was to try and move it up. And you know, they were lucky in a sense that the back-to-back December games were in Toronto because that field, BMO Field, has the underheating there to make it a little bit warmer at field level. Now, when I say a little bit warmer, it was probably still below freezing at certainly in 60, maybe a bit above in 17. And, you know, in the crowd, I can tell you that it was horrific in 16. Like, it was mind-numbing. It was just numbing all over the body, numbing in 16. In 17, it was okay, but it was still cold because it's December and you are in Canada.
The image, part of the, like, just to know how cold it was, they gave toques to everyone and scarves to everyone because they, well, to the journalists, because, like, yeah, you guys will need those. And I had under like, two layers of pants. I was dressed properly, and I was still freezing, and around me, Aaron Papernick from SiriusXM, hello Aaron, was there freezing his butt off. I had Sofiane Benzaz on the other side from Kung Fu Ball Club in Montreal freezing his ass off, and behind us were Jimmy Conrad. I don't think I've seen Jimmy Conrad this bundled up and freezing. Like, yeah, the guy was freezing his you-know-what off, and I felt bad for a lot of those people used to a little hotter weather, like, yeah, welcome to Canada, eh?
I'm just amazed to put Jimmy Conrad in the secondary press box.
He was outside.
I guess the rights holders would have got inside.
Exactly.
Which you're probably a better view outside. God love. For 2026, guys, can we get a better press box at BMO? Just a little partitions wish list there for you.
You know the partitions and the windows and the press box? Yeah, we can't see half the field with those. And if you're next to the wall, you literally can't see half the field, but that's another rant for another day.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully that's part of the renovations for 26 is to improve that press box. But these officially are first world problems, and not only first world problems, first world journalism problems. But at any rate, no, they lucked out a little there. The first ever home World Cup, Gold Cup. I'm mixing all the cups up here. MLS Cup was actually the Kansas City game, which was the coldest game on record. We forgot about that a few weeks ago when we were talking about whether there'd ever been a home winner before. Of course, Kansas City did win that under minus zillion degrees. After that, they've never had a real warm one. They haven't lucked out in their minds to go to a warm climate. They might this year, although Atlanta's not hot this time of year. Atlanta's just temperate this time of year.
But it's an indoor stadium, so it doesn't matter. You just leave the stadium closed, and you don't care about the weather.
Yeah, you wander to your events. It's not like MLS Cup. Look, I think they tried. I've been to, obviously, neutral site MLS Cup as well, and they did try and make it a Super Bowl kind of thing. Hold your laughter back, guys, in terms of they tried to have events around it, but they just didn't work.
Yeah, no.
And yeah, you know, like, I mean, they had a concert at BMO in 2010, and there were 20 people there. It was embarrassing. It was the band Sloan. If you know who Sloan is, you probably don't in the States, but in Canada, they're a fairly well-known band. And there were just 20 people in this crowd because it just didn't draw any attention, and it was too cold. At any rate, so yeah, they just need the game to be nice, and this is a way to sort of address that. Because I guarantee you, like, look, worst-case scenario in Canada on the 11th of November – which is my birthday, so I know the weather pretty well in my head, which is about the time that you're going to be doing this. It's cool. It's brisk. And yeah. I'm sure that if you're from Florida, you're not going to enjoy it. But to us, it's nothing that time of year. It's never going to be dangerous. It would be an absolute freak of nature for it to be like minus 10 or something on November 11th. So your worst case scenario is Montreal probably or Minnesota, and you're probably looking at maybe around zero. and zero, not zero Fahrenheit, zero rest of world, and zero rest of world 32. Is fine.
And you might be lucky too that it could be 20 degrees Celsius. It could be like 70 degrees Fahrenheit because global warming. So, so it is true. We have some hot weather temperature late in the fall season sometimes too. Well, this year they would have had snow on the 11th of November. So you never know. It's a quite a gamble. But those are the changes that might happen.
Sorry, it'd be like Grey Cup weather. And if you've ever watched the Grey Cup, there are American football fans out there that probably do. Some years it's snow and it's like that adds to the atmosphere. And other years it's balmy in t-shirts. So that's what it is.
Yep. And we will have more details during MLS Cup week when the Board of Governors have their closed meeting. And if anything comes out of it and any announcement for next year, we will know more. And that's an interesting aspect too, is next year with the new expansion team, there will be probably a conference realignment as well. Will Houston go back to the Eastern Conference? There's a good probability that it does. It
wouldn't shock me if there's Central Conference that is invented in some way, and then the playoff gets even weirder. But yeah, which is also how maybe they're adding the seventh team, and no one's really thought about that, is they're going to divisions instead of conferences, and that's going to make everyone angry if they do that. But yeah, Kevin, I we're really running late on this. I know this, but I think the February, we should talk about that real quickly before
we go. Yeah, no, I agree. February... for us, fine. I might have a trip down south to go watch the Impact play and cover those games. Perfect. I can go to Atlanta. I can go to Florida in February.
Yeah, which is... I can make jokes about half of Quebec's in Florida in February anyway. But anyway, that's...
Touche. Touche.
Exactly.
Hi, Dad. Hi, Dad. How you doing? Can I crash your bunk bed? Perfect.
There you go. It would be a bit of a challenge for the northern teams, but what you would see happen is that the southern teams, it's a challenge for them in the deep, hot summer. So you just flip it so that we'd have a lot of home dates in July and August in the Northeast, and they would have a lot of home dates in February and March in the Southeast, Southwest. And that, I think, would probably benefit people weather-wise and help the attendance a little bit there, because it is nasty to watch a game in 120 degrees Fahrenheit, and it is nasty to watch a game in minus 30. So you don't want either or. Now, there are – I don't think you'd have to have, like, 10-game road trips or something like that, like TFC saw a couple years ago and DC saw this year. What you can do is you can mix it up a little bit. Like BMO Field, for instance, is going to be set up still, because we have games in February now where you can play the odd game early on. You don't want to overstress the field like we saw with the CCL this past year, unless you have to as part of a CCL, but you could play one or two. So you're splitting it up a bit. The Big O is available for a couple. Yeah. You don't want to play 10 games up there. So there's options. And I'm sure other cities in the Northeast can do a little bit better. Places like Minnesota might be challenged a little bit. I don't know what their new stadium set up in terms of underheating, but and then the Northwest is fine. They're temperate all year, so they could play in February there if they want anyway.
And BC Place is a dome, so if they leave they leave it closed, they're good to go. So there's a few of those too in Major League Soccer that could host. There's a few places in Major League Soccer, and there's more now than before that could host those games to compensate for the weather for the first few months of the season. And then, like you mentioned, you flip them for the summer months, where teams in the Northeast will have more home games, and teams like Orlando, Atlanta, Houston, Dallas would not have to play in the big July heat all the time and August heat now. So, yeah.
Yeah, and look. There are people out there that remain completely committed to the idea of playing the winter schedule. The only way a winter schedule could work in this league would be...
if global warming continues.
Yeah, or they have a prolonged winter break, which would almost work. So they're just flipping the season at that point, Kevin. So, I mean, this might be a test for that, but I don't like it, because I think what you'd have is a two-month break in the middle of the season. I don't think that's any good for anyone either. But it could be seen as a test that way.
Well, we know Bundesliga takes a month off in like a month time, just after Christmas. They take a month off for the winter break, and it does lose a little bit of momentum. Imagine that being 2 months break and not trying to explain to people that, no, the same season than last year, just takes a 2 months break and then it starts over again. We already have enough difficulty explaining what MLS Cup is versus regular season versus U.S. Open Cup, Voyagers Cup versus CCL. Now explain a 2 month break on top of it. Yeah, I'm tapping out.
Yeah, I mean, it's you got. There's no perfect time to have MLS because there's challenges to North American because we have a lot more going on here in a sporting calendar than you do in most European countries where there's or rest of the world countries where there's really only one league, and it's the football league, right? Whereas here you have to compete against the NHL in Canada, the NBA and the NFL, you know, NBA to a certain extent in Toronto anyway, but the NFL for sure in the United States, right? Like Major League Baseball playoffs are in October, which is when the season's peaking down here. The NFL is all king. Like those are challenges that you're going to have to get around. And, you know, if you flip the season around and have a spring playoff instead of a fall playoff, you're avoiding the NFL and college football, which is a huge thing to avoid, but you're hitting the NBA and the NHL playoffs. So there's no perfect answer when it comes to that. And I just don't think that the summer – sorry, that having the summer schedule hurts them on the transfer window the same way that so many people that are advocates for the summer – for the winter schedule, for the rest of the world schedule, which isn't the rest of the world because the Scandinavian countries play through the summer too. I just don't think it hurts it the way that people suggest that it does.
No, yeah, I agree. So it will be an interesting – topic of discussion to keep an eye on when MLS Cup comes this year, when they have the Board of Governor meeting, and when we have that famous press conference, the State of the League press conference by Don Garber, usually the day before Major League MLS Cup. We'll get more on those details. To finish the show, Dwayne, today, the NWSL Players Association is now recognized as a union and can now truly represent its members and make demands and especially ask for a more fair treatment and a more standardized treatment of its players, of the paychecks, of the working conditions, which basically means locker rooms and good travel accommodations for its members.
Yeah, it was a players association since 2017 where the non allocated players, which is a complicated way to say the non-national team players, mostly U.S. national team players, but of course there are some Canadian national team players, Christine Sinclair prominent among them, that would be part of the allocated players, which are kind of covered under their own collective bargaining agreements with their federations, whereas the non-allocated players were not. So they formed a group together a couple years ago that wasn't recognized as a union until earlier this week. That means that they've gone from being able to collectively talk to the league to collectively bargain with the league. And that's a very important distinction if you understand labor laws. We'll see what this means moving forward in terms of the relationship between the players, the non-allocated players in particular, and the rest of the league and the league itself, and the allocated players, which adds a complication to it. But certainly I think it's a positive step because as we saw with that Equalizer article that came out earlier this year, there are a lot of inconsistencies in the NWSL, and if they truly want to maintain their spot as the best women's league in the world, which I think it still sort of is, but it's holding on with a thread right now.
I think it is by the it's tough to say if it still is, right? When you I don't know, it's a good question that too.
Yeah, and if they want to maintain that spot, then they absolutely need to make sure that they have consistent standards across the league, because that has been the biggest problem with it. You have great, like the RSL team, the team in Salt Lake that I've started this year is a wonderful organization. The North Carolina is a wonderful organization, two-time champions now. They do great things, but then you look at the
Sky Blue,
yeah, and it's night and day, right? So you need to get some consistency across that, and it makes perfect sense that these non-allocated players should bond together and fight to make sure that their standards are held up. Because bluntly, it's a different scale because women's sports doesn't make the same amount of money and the insane money that men's sport does, even in MLS. There's no one making $7 million in the NWSL, but
I don't think the league itself makes $7 million, but yes.
Yeah. But in context, the difference in salary between an entry level person in the NWSL versus a U.S. women's national team regular, in context, the spread is as big. So do really need to address some of that stuff.
Some players need to work. Some players actually have like full time jobs next to playing for professional, quote unquote, professional setup. So, yeah, that's still a. a difficult model.
Yeah, and you're seeing more and more of them go to, like, the Canadians, for instance. If you, like, look at this from a Canadian perspective, Jordan Heidemann, for instance, when she trained earlier this year, she had an opportunity to go to PSG. We've seen Kadisha Buchanan, Ashley Lawrence. These are players that have decided to go Europe rather than the NWSL, even though they would have a guaranteed salary in the NWSL that doesn't match them, what they're doing. So that's... that says something. And if you continue, and Mexico completely pulled out and started their own league. So,
and by the way, their own league is probably the second biggest women's league in the world right now, right behind the NWSL, maybe.
Yeah. The problem with the French league is that they have two teams in the French league.
And, yes. There's Lyon and there's PSG. There's a gap. Yeah. There's another gap, and there's a few teams.
Yeah. And look, maybe we'll end it with that. It's, first off, go back to the union thing. Yeah. I mean, I come from a union family, so obviously I'm going to be supportive of anyone collectively coming together, and we're not going to have this political debate about that right now. That's just my position, and I think particularly in this context, it makes sense. So we'll leave that well enough alone. But in terms of the overall structure of women's football, all of this adds to something that's better. The advantage the NWSL has right now is that top to bottom, they have a consistent standard more so. We mentioned Sky Blue as an outlier to that, and you want to protect that so it doesn't get worse because you don't want to create the stuff like that's in Europe. But, you know, we have all these conversations about a Super League on the men's side of the game. Just like the World Club Cup is more needed on the women's side where it doesn't exist, I think a Super League is more needed on the women's side where it doesn't exist too, because that could make – if that ever happened, I think the NWSL is in trouble.
Like the Club World Cup where you have Portland Thorns with the Seattle Reigns. You have a club from Canada, so I don't know if it exists. A club from Canada. You have a couple clubs from Liga Femina MX. You have Chelsea. You have Liverpool. No, never mind. You have Yeovil Town, which played against the Super League in the Super League against Chelsea this weekend. A few other teams: Manchester City, PSG, and Lyon, the women's side, and they battle it out for a trophy. Maybe the World League, Dwayne, should be on the women's side.
There you go. Yeah, I. Look, I think that when it comes to the growth of the women's game, that we have to let go of some of the standards that we apply to the men's side of the game. We need to take advantage of those men's structures that are out there, but you need to forge their own as well, because I don't think you can be held back by the way that the men's game evolved when you're talking about the women's game, because I think that that might ultimately hold it back a little bit.
Yeah, I think it does. So that's an interesting aspect, and we wish all the best to the NWSL Players Union. You've got a lot of work on your table, and hopefully you're able to get it done for the benefit of your members, which are the players that we love watching. So that's important. As always, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Larame, the show at Soccer Today SPN. And again, thank you to all our patrons. You can become a patron at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. $2 a month will give you access to the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast, a weekly show for patrons only, where Dwayne and I go deep, deep in the world of Canadian soccer, Canadian Premier League, Canadian soccer news, Canadian men's national team, women's national team, U17 Women's World Cup, and everything in between on the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast. And as always, until tomorrow, for Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Larame. Have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.